Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present former Senator Mike Gravel of Alaska, who critically assesses the U.S. Supreme Court's intervention in the five-week-long post-election dispute. Ted Glick, national coordinator of the Independent Progressive Politics Network, who describes a national pro-democracy campaign motivated by this year's contested presidential election. And Barbara Briggs of the National Labour Committee, who talks about her group's current campaign to support fired union workers at the Chentex clothing factory in Nicaragua. But first, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
Brazil's prisons have long been notorious for brutalizing inmates. Now, a former prison doctor has written a best-selling book telling horrific tales of prison squalor, violence, and disease. Despite inquiries by Amnesty International and the Organization of American States, Brazil's prison conditions are only getting worse. There are over 220,000 people waiting in detention centers, and riots and escape attempts at these centers occur nearly every day. Up to this point, Brazil has tried to build itself out of the prison crisis. This year, the state government in Sao Paulo has constructed 3,800 new prison beds, but there are 6,700 new prisoners waiting to fill the cells. During a recent tour of Brazilian prisons, Sir Nigel Rodney of the United Nations Commission for Human Rights endorsed the call to change prison sentencing. He called prison conditions subhuman and complained of violent, arbitrary, and corrupt behavior among prison guards. The Roman Catholic Church in Brazil claims that upwards of 70% of the inmates could be freed. Significant numbers of prisoners are behind bars for minor drug and robbery offenses. In October, the Brazilian national government encouraged the creation of community service programs for prisoners. Finally, Brazil may be shamed into creating humane conditions for tens of thousands of prison inmates. The New Internationalist magazine reports that gay rights are now integrated into South African law. It started 6 years ago, when the African National Congress pushed through the groundbreaking Equality Clause, which banned discrimination based on sexual orientation into South Africa's new constitution. That was just the beginning for gay and lesbian South Africans. In contrast to neighboring countries Zimbabwe and Namibia, South Africa has continued to expand legal rights for gays and lesbians, at times surpassing the progress made in many European nations. In cases brought by the National Coalition for Gay and Lesbian Equality, the South African Constitutional Court decriminalized gay sex in 1997, and the court has granted permanent residency status to same-sex partners. In addition, gay rights advocates in South Africa have won domestic partner benefits, the freedom for gays to serve in the military, and legal protection in cases of domestic violence. Still, gays living in poor rural districts fear being victims of violent attacks and rape. Each year, the Gay and Lesbian Legal Advice Center handles over 600 cases of complaints, ranging from violations of employment rights to domestic violence. In recent years, the legal center has had trouble getting private funding to defend gay rights. But the center serves as a model for other African nations, as it is the continent's only gay legal rights organization. In early December, after 10 years of detailed scientific review of leaking hazardous PCBs, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced a plan to force General Electric to dredge 40 toxic hotspots in the upper reaches of the Hudson River, near where the industrial giant legally dumped PCBs or polychlorinated biphenyls for 30 years. The EPA cleanup plan, one of the largest in American history, is a major victory for New York environmentalists, who for nearly 20 years have pushed for dredging PCBs out of the Hudson River. As a result of the PCB pollution, New York State has severely restricted fishing in the Hudson, and the EPA has designated 200 miles of the river below GE's plants as a federal Superfund site. The EPA cleanup plan will take 5 years to complete and cost GE $460 million. A final cleanup order is expected in June 2001. For its part, GE is ready to fight the dredging plan with all the clout and money that the multi-billion-dollar corporation can muster. Many environmentalists worry about GE's clout if Republican George W. Bush is sworn in as the next president. Andy Mealy of Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, a group founded by Pete Seeger over 30 years ago, fears that GE could still shirk its cleanup responsibility by cutting a backroom deal with a Bush White House. Mealy concluded, "GE will play hardball. I think it is going to get ugly. Let's face it, a Bush EPA will cave." This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Archibald Curry.
By issuing a stay of Florida's high court ruling to hand count ballots in all of the state's 67 counties, the U.S. Supreme Court has taken on the responsibility of making the politically charged decision as to who will serve as the nation's next president. The partisan nature of the Supreme Court's preliminary decision to halt the vote count was evident in the breakdown of the 5-4 decision. Concerns about conflicts of interest among the Supreme Court's conservative justices in making this historic ruling emerged in several press accounts. Justice Clarence Thomas's wife was engaged in gathering resumes for appointments in a future Bush administration as part of her work for the Heritage Foundation, a longtime Republican Party ally. An earlier report revealed that Justice Antonin Scalia's son Eugene was a partner in a law firm representing the Bush campaign before the Supreme Court. The New York Daily News also presented an account in which Scalia threatened to leave the court if a Democrat were to win the presidency because he would have no chance at being named Chief Justice by Al Gore. Between the Lines' Scott Harris spoke with former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel, who represented Alaska in Congress from 1969 to 1981. The senator, an energetic advocate for environmental protection and arms control in Washington, critically assesses the Supreme Court's intervention in the 5-week-long post-election dispute.
They've made a mistake from day one in injecting themselves into what is essentially a political matter. And the court historically has always tried to avoid political questions, leaving that to the people and the legislatures in question. And so their injection is going to do damage to the credibility of the court. If they render a 5-4 decision terminating everything and George Bush becomes the president, this will forever color the partisan nature of the Supreme Court. Ideologues who really worship the court like to say, well, it's not a partisan issue, it's an ideological issue. Well, of course, that's just another word for partisan, unfortunately. What's embarrassing for Bush is that he's in a position of saying, let's not count the votes and let's use whatever legal chicanery is possible to effect a final decision in my favor. I think, unfortunately, this will cast a cloud over his presidency. He will be damaged goods, and with the way the Congress is going to be gridlocked, we're going to see the next 4 years, probably the worst 4 years of any presidential administration in history.
Aside from the propaganda and who an individual might want to be president of the United States, and it seems like people's opinions on the court case really, you know, divide right along who they want to sit in the White House. But to not count votes, it's eerie to me that so many people are buying the argument that counting votes is somehow wrong.
Well, and what they're trying to use as a standard is that there's an imperfect standard in counting the votes. Well, there was an imperfect standard in machine voting. There's an imperfect standard in all of this. And so their criteria that we shouldn't count the votes because it's going to be done on an imperfect standard, I think is just ridiculous because the whole process has been on an imperfect standard. And so what you do is you do the best you can. And in this particular instance, they were going to have a single judge supervise the standard for the entire count. Now, I can't think of any better process than that.
If the Supreme Court should make the decision that the count will stop permanently and that, by default, George W. Bush, the certified winner of the 25 Florida electoral votes, will become the next president. Will those votes ever be counted that are locked away in Tallahassee at this point?
Yes, they will. And I understand the newspaper down in Florida is intent on doing that. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of scholars and academics that want to do this and write books about it. If the court did that, they will polarize the country, because I don't think they'll be able to do that on a unanimous vote. And if they do on a partisan vote, then the Supreme Court is going to be tarnished, probably more tarnished than it ever has been in its history. And that's going to be, you could say it's unfortunate. I don't know if it's unfortunate. I think what's important is for the American people to realize that the court is made up of human beings, and they amend the Constitution wantonly, literally, and of course there's no procedures for the people to amend the Constitution. So I think that what we need to understand is the judiciary is not a place for justice. It's a place where you get an interpretation of a law, and if the law is a bad law, you get bad interpretation as a product of that. This should be seen so Americans could grow up and realize that the judiciary is no more honored than any other American institution, and that these institutions are run by human beings, and human beings are guilty of human nature.
How do you think the American people will react to a George W. Bush presidency, whether he gets in through legislative fiat or through a stop of the vote count by the Supreme Court? What do you think the repercussions for his administration will be among just public opinion-wise? Because a lot of people say that the American people are forgiving and that they forget quickly these controversies, and a year from now this whole thing will just be an historical footnote. What do you think?
Hardly, hardly. The American people are forgiving. They've got a sense of fair play as to what should be done and how it should be done. And I think we saw that with their reaction to the impeachment process. They didn't buy into the impeachment, which they took as a witch hunt. Now, with respect to Bush getting in there, the fact that his credentials will be soiled, that the Supreme Court will be soiled, the entire institution of representative government is going to be soiled, and Bush's honeymoon is going to disappear 2 weeks before he's elected. And that would mean that it's going to be fair game with the political partisan forces to just tear each other up. And, of course, this comes at the expense of public policy. And you're not going to see much take place in the next 2 to 4 years.
That was former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel, who currently serves as the president of the group Direct Democracy. Contact Direct Democracy by visiting its website at www.philadelphiatwo.org. Whoever takes the oath of office on the steps of the Capitol this January, many citizens will view both this year's election process and the next president as lacking credibility. As the post-election dispute dragged on for more than a month, moving from courtroom to courtroom, the nation and the world were exposed to the shortcomings of the often glorified U.S. electoral system. But beyond the accounts of malfunctioning voting machines and the public shock that tens of thousands of ballots are routinely thrown out, many citizens are for the first time recognizing the systemic failures of U.S. democracy. Growing public disgust with the influence of big money in political campaigns, the limitations of our winner-take-all system, and the anti-democratic nature of the Electoral College are but a few of the issues which may resonate with citizens long after the next president takes office. Between the Lines' Scott Harris spoke with Ted Glick, national coordinator of the Independent Progressive Politics Network. Ted describes a pro-democracy campaign motivated in part by this year's disputed presidential election and launched by a progressive coalition.